that is borne on me. And the last thing I wanted to say is that I really appreciate Commissioner Fritz and her feeling. My feeling is, as stewardship, you take care of the city of Portland's buildings. You get the city staff to focus on taking care of the stewardship of our town. And it's not just the buildings. You also have bridges that I believe the city of Portland is responsible for maintenance.
No, Multnomah County is.
Pardon me?
That's Multnomah County.
They own it, but is Portland not responsible for maintenance?
No.
But we all have
an obligation. We've got a boatload of stuff that we can't pay for.
My point is we don't have any bridge that will stand up with a seismic up.
Yeah, your larger point is correct.
Yeah.
Except for the Silicon Crossing.
So stewardship first, responsibility. You've got City of Portland has some responsibility in this, not just the owners.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Next three, please.
Is Pippa Arend here? Okay. Sanella, I believe it's Ruzzani. Elaine McArdle.
Elaine had to leave.
Okay, thank you. Suzanne Rice. Jim Wilson.
Good afternoon.
So we got three coming.
Do you want to go ahead and start for us?
Yeah.
Thank you.
As an owner of a URM and as a founder of PEAR, working in housing and homelessness issues, I want to be very clear. No one wants unsafe buildings, as we've talked about. However, this mandate was created unfairly without representation of small owners such as myself, condo owners, artists, and other stakeholders. It's important to realize that these retrofits are very expensive. Just this morning, the Willamette Week quoted the city's housing bureau estimating that the retrofits will cost at least $60 million for just 34 of the city's 73 URMs. That's almost $2 million per building. I agree with that number. My estimates are really similar for my own. Instead of enabling small owners to achieve increased safety standards, you are putting us at risk. We don't have access to the financial and engineering resources that Walter McMoney's and others of his caliber or you have. You will achieve the opposite of your goal. You will achieve blight. This is because the mandate increases retrofit requirements while on a timeline, while providing no funding, while causing a reduction in access to capital, while not providing that there will be no further mandate next year or the year after. This will have a damaging effect on the local owners, who are often nonprofits, women, minorities, the elderly, the working class owners who have maintained our main streets for decades. The only winners here are the big developers who have sufficient capital to buy our properties without loans and who will demolish them and will build bigger buildings with higher rent for bigger returns. A mandate will create a city owned by those who care more about money than our diverse and creative community. The current retrofit code works. We don't need a new punitive one. We don't need to choose between preservation and safety. That is a false narrative. I urge you to retrofit your own buildings, the schools and critical buildings, and then enforce and fund the current code for privately owned buildings. In the words of Jane Jacobs, this is not the building of cities, this is the sacking of cities.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, can you state your name? I need your name for the record. You just spoke.
Pippa Arend.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Hello. My name is Sanella Ruzhnic. I live in a waste building on 23rd. I came to this country 23 years ago from Bosnia as a refugee, and since I've come from the war, it's been my lifelong passion to study conflict and to understand conflict. And I actually scratched what I was going to say to just raise some questions. Talking about resilience, public safety, and mandate to protect people. We have listened here lots of technocrats speaking about technical sides of things, of earthquakes and how buildings respond to the earthquakes, but the city has not asked for the study or considered the study of what is going to happen to the people and what are the people's responses to not just disaster, but to the conflict, because this is going to create conflict, and there is a conflict already in Portland with rising rents, homelessness, non-affordable housing, and so forth. Conflict rises primarily from perceived or real inequality. From these perceived or real inequality, there is a rising of a social conflict, and it's not just homelessness and mental health issues. It's people who are dissatisfied with what is going on in the city. So I would like to urge the city consider taking the perspective that in conflict, when there is earthquake, people, when there are natural disasters, people band together. When there is a conflict that is caused by this inequality, it's more conflict there is violence.
Thank you.
There is a social violence.
Thank you. Appreciate your perspective on that. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thanks for having us today. My name is Susie Rice, and I'm a native Portlander and nurse at OHSU. I was born, raised, and educated all in the state of Oregon. I live in the URM Aberdeen condominiums and bought in 2016, and I bought without disclosure that the Aberdeen was URM because the city of Portland sent its notice to the developer's mailbox, which is not located at the Aberdeen. We are a small condo association with only 14 owners, and our building is up to current code, requiring a full mandate of Aberdeen owners without full financial help would most certainly put so much financial strain on our small association that people would have to walk away from their homes, which would be financially devastating. You know this. This is my first home that I bought all on my own. You can imagine my excitement I felt buying my first home, a beautiful historic Portland condo, and you can imagine the sadness I feel now thinking I might lose it. I love my city, but I also wonder what's happening to it that our local government is willing to financially ruin and or displace people for a mandate that is not well thought out. As a nurse that has worked in the pediatric ICU in Dornbecker, a trauma floor at OHSU, and now in emergency services, I see firsthand the consequences of displacement and its impact on families and individual mental health. I am in full support of safety for our buildings, but I'm also in support for our immediate well-being. I spent a lot of time around various local government buildings and elected officials, as my grandmother, Betty Roberts, was very active in Oregon politics and an Oregon Supreme Court justice. She taught me about democracy and how people's voices should always be heard. I hope you hear our voices and our stories today, and that you don't require this mandate without full financial support and a plan for displacement.
Thank you.
Thank you.
She was a great woman.
She was.
One of my favorites.
Thank you.
So
next
there,
three, please.
Jim Wilson, just come on up if I call your name. Jim Wilson, Lisa Ward, Lynn Hanrahan, Marcus Irving. Oh, I think I've got some three people. Okay, just a minute. Okay. Robert Hunter. Oh, go on up.
Can I just see a show of hands how many people have signed up but not yet had the chance to testify? Okay. Not that many. Good. We'll get through everybody. Good afternoon.
Hello. My name is Jim Wilson. I moved here 34 years ago from Alberta to purchase and renovate my first building. So I gave up my path to Canadian citizenship and a lot of great access to mountaineering in the Canadian Rockies. We purchased a three-story 1911 brick building at 843 North Knott some 20 years ago. We manage and maintain it. My mother had a stroke 3 years ago, and the income helps pay for her independent living residence. To install a new roof with seismic upgrades, according to our bids, is between $147,000 and $170,000. The seismic component of that is $70,000. Only one-third of our parapet needs back bracing, or the figure would be higher. Our engineer calculates this reduces the loads at that level by a factor of 4. This is a significant reduction in the loads for the money spent. The walls to floors upgrades would cost an additional several hundred thousand dollars. Oregon Senate Bill 311 would provide $134,000 of property tax relief over a 20-year period. So that would pay for the $70,000 of the roof, but would only allow $64,000 to pay for several hundred thousand dollars of upgrades to do floors to walls. If we could make the upgrades, we cannot afford the walls to floors upgrades. If we could, we would make the upgrades and have to change the use of the building or build out higher-end units. The problem with Senate Bill 311 is it defunds schools and services, and contractors do not take payments over a 20-year time frame. A number of owners will need financial support to accomplish the roof-to-walls upgrades. We would need significant financial support to accomplish the floors-to-walls upgrades. Upgrading existing URM buildings with affordable or reasonably priced rents, whether it is in the city's inventory or privately held, is an excellent investment. Therefore, we support Commissioner Fish's amendment in an effort to help owners succeed in increasing safety and retain affordable space for residents and businesses.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is Lisa Ward, and among other things, I'm a native Portlander. I'm an architect. I'm an artist with a shared studio space, which is a unreinforced masonry building in North Portland. And I also work in the film industry. I'm a proud member of IATSE 488 and LA 800. I'm a set designer and an art director. I was actually surprised at the thoroughness of the report. I've been here since the beginning, and I wanted to thank the council and thank the committee for all the work that they have done. I think there's more work to be done. I think that no one would argue with the safety concerns that are being raised here. I think we should all look to a financial solution. I think this is a civic issue, and I think that we should be looking to levies to support the improvements to happen to Class 1 and Class 2 buildings as soon as possible, maybe even sooner than the time frame proposed. In terms of Class 3 and Class 4 buildings, I think we should be looking to the developers who are tearing our city apart and to start looking at using fees from those development projects, which are making people a lot of money, to put back into preserving the Portland that older Portlanders love and want to protect. And I'm going to finish my testimony by reading a few paragraphs from Jane Jacobs' Death and Life of Great Cities. This is the need for aged buildings. Cities need old buildings so badly, it's probably impossible for vigorous streets and districts to grow without them. By old buildings, I mean not museum piece old buildings, not old buildings in an excellent and expensive state of rehabilitation, although these make fine ingredients, but also a good lot of plain, ordinary, low-value old buildings, including some rundown old buildings. If a city area has only new buildings, the enterprises that can exist there are automatically limited to those that can support the high costs of new construction.
So I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm going to have to leave very soon. So
that's fine. I just to end, as for really new ideas of any kind, no matter how ultimately profitable or otherwise successful some of them might prove to be, there is no leeway for such chancy trial, error, and experimentation in the high overhead economy of new construction. Old ideas can sometimes use new buildings. New ideas must use old buildings. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Lynn Hanrahan, and I'm here with my husband, Steve, who's back there. And Steve and I have actually been involved with a couple URM buildings. The first one, the old gas station at Seven Corners, 2106 Southeast Division. We ran a kitchen and home store there for 16 years, and we retired last year. The owner, who's a Californian, who was very, very interested in retrofits because he understood the issue more firsthand than we do, wanted to sell the building. So when we retired, the new owner that bought it from our landlord wanted to open a restaurant in the current space. But because of the retrofit and the expense to update it and just in general and what it would take to open a restaurant, he said it doesn't pencil out. So that building is now going to be torn down. So we can see that it's already kind of happening here. And that building needed a lot of work. I understand it's not, it's not like the next building I'm going to talk to. It needed a lot of work. but it's a loved building. I loved that building. So then move to the other situation, 1529 Southeast Hawthorne. We just heard from Susan Rice, who's the OHSU nurse. So we bought a studio condo in that building in 2006, so a low-income brother would have secure housing. So we did not know we were on the URM list, and so in the time frame from when you first started having meetings, August of 2016 to November of 2017, three people bought units in our building, not knowing that, there was a huge financial cloud behind them, and that should have never happened. So when Susie bought her unit, she didn't know it was on the URM list, and the realtor didn't, and the bankers didn't. So that's a very unfortunate aspect of this. And the other concern I have is condos. How is a condo association going to manage this? So I think we need a funded mandate if we're going to have a mandate. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you. Appreciate it.
Richard Larson, Paul Medica, Megan McGuire, Louis Longmire, Susan Emmons, Steve Rose.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me here. I appreciate the work that the council's done on this and the committees. I agree with Commissioner Fish's amendments and the work that's been done overall.
State your name for the record, please.
Richard Larson.
Thank you.
Sorry. I think I agree with a lot of the testimony about the no financing is the problem, that it's going to put a burden on not only the mom and pop, but I think everybody that looks at investment in real estate as well as livelihood. I don't know about the death sentence issues, but I think if you take a 7,000 square foot building and add $700,000 worth of seismic upgrades to it, you can't increase your basis in a building by 50% and not expect that the rents aren't going to follow. So the demolition is probably the likely course for a lot of these buildings. I think there should be some exceptions included in the policy for single-story buildings. Maybe there's a different way to look at those. There's a lot of those in the city. Hawthorne Boulevard is littered just lot after lot with one- and two-story brick buildings. It'd be unfortunate if they all looked like the glass palaces that are happening on the infill. So I appreciate the council. I think that funding is necessary for a mandate. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Paul Medica. I'm a URM building manager and part owner on Belmont, in the Belmont district, which is very close to Hawthorne. And I will echo what the person to my left here mentioned, which is on the main streets, the arteries within the city, especially in the southeast side, they are basically the main areas where the URM buildings are located, except where you have schools. I'm affected. My tenants are affected. I am not the ordinary manager. I took the time to inform my tenants that they are living in a URM building and also to inform them of what safety precautions they need to take in the case of an event. So, and then in the past 3 months, I took some time to examine URM improvement programs around the country. I actually made a trip to San Francisco and Charleston, South Carolina. Now, I know most of you don't realize the city of Charleston suffered an estimated magnitude 7.7 seismic event in 1890, and another event in 1921. I researched this on the web and did some extensive research in other areas where a municipality or a county successfully instituted a URM seismic upgrade program in an area where there had been a recent or no recent seismic event, excuse me. And I came across FEMA report P774, which documents, it's very interesting, by the way, and I submit to this council that they should just at least browse it. Okay, it was written for the use by non-technical audiences. And the title of it is Unreinforced Masonry Building Earthquake Development Successful Risk Reduction Program. And I'll make this very quick. In the casework that FEMA represents or presents in this document, okay, there are two of 12 case studies. There are only two that have a common theme. Local funding, support with local finance institutions, and a program inception after a recent seismic event.
That's interesting. Thank you. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Hi there. I'm Steve Rose with Bristol Urban Apartments, and I was also on the retrofit support committee. Let's see. I established my business 28 years ago. My company manages 35 mostly historic apartment buildings with over 850 apartment units. Several of them are URMs. Also, I was appointed by Governor Kulongowski to the Oregon Seismic Safety Policy Advisory Commission in 2001 and served till 2004. I would like to speak to the public process and the meetings that I was either a participant in or an observer. I did attend some of the standard committee meetings, but was not invited or allowed to provide any input in discussions on establishing the retrofit requirements. I questioned the issue of liquefaction as a risk and was told that they were not interested in using it as a factor. That continued throughout the process and is even true today. I also talked about the potential effect on all buildings, including new construction, in a major Cascadia event, and there was little interest in any discussion on that matter. I was appointed to the other committee, the Incentive Committee at the time, which was later changed to the Support Committee. The Support Committee brainstormed many different ideas about possible sources of financing, grants, rebates, tax abatements, tax credits, and even FAR transfers, but in the end, we did not make any significant progress on any. Bottom line, after meeting for a year, the committee could not come up with any tools that would enable owners of URMs to execute any proposed mandatory retrofits that the standards committee had put forth without severe hardship, probable financial ruin, and demolition. Since 1994 code was established to require retrofits as active triggers only, changes of occupancy, major renovations, and even installation of new roof could trigger a need for the owner of a URM to perform some level of retrofit building. Let's have a couple of more seconds here. However, to date, nearly 24 years later, very few URMs have undergone any retrofit work to make them safer. And it is not because building owners are cheaters or bad stewards, or for that matter, fans of being unsafe. Heck, many URM owners live and work in their own buildings. More progress has to be made for one simple reason. Its overall cost and the inability to borrow the money to get the work done. Banks will not lend on URMs. A quick word about placarding, which I know was discussed.
Very quick. You're almost a minute over.
Okay.
Lots of people waiting.
I was on the committee. I don't know if that allows me.
I'm giving it to you, but just be mindful. Okay. There's people waiting.
We agreed in our committee that placarding could be used as an incentive, similar to historic building placarding, once a building went through the process of the work being done. However, we were very adamant against placarding unless there was a code compliance after the expired term to perform the work. So I support the mayor's and Commissioner Fish's resolutions in an important step to dealing with retrofits. However, I cannot impress upon the commissioners strong enough the need to enable owners by providing financing and financial incentives to comply with any mandate.
All set. Thank you. Thank you, all three of you. Next three, please.
Sorry, lost my place here. Let's see. Let's go with Ben Kaiser. Oh, what's your name? Okay, this is Robert Hunter. We'll go with Ben Kaiser. Is there an Amanda Robahow? Sorry.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
You want to go ahead and start?
First of all, thank you to the commission. Thank you, Mayor. And I agree with everything that's been discussed today. I won't repeat most of it. I think we've been dealing...
Put your name in the record, please.
I'm sorry. My name is Ben Kaiser. And I've been studying this issue for about 5 years now from the private side and digging deep into what we can do as a city around early notification systems. And I think there's great advancements around the world in regard to that. So I think if we're talking about spending this amount of money as a city or as private citizens, I think that's something to explore. I also fully support your idea, Commissioner Fritz, around a tax that we all pay as city citizens. I think that's a fair way to dispense the costs that we'd all benefit from for both these private and public buildings, as well as the public infrastructure. I think that's an important thing that we can all adopt rather than putting it all on the private sector to solve. I think we're all in this together, so I think a tax citywide would be important. I think it's also important to dig into the actual facts of the case. So when we're talking about preserving life, let's really study what we're talking about. Since the founding of the United States, since early 1800, about 4 people die per year in earthquakes around the United States. More people die from vending machines falling on them. More people die from lightning strikes. And really, an opioid epidemic is killing 20,000 people a year in the United States as opposed to 4 as a result of earthquakes. And it was brought up the San Francisco earthquake. What's fascinating about that, those were mostly wood buildings in 1906. The majority of those burned down in the fire caused by the broken gas lines, not by URM buildings. Those were predominantly wood buildings at the time. The Tohoku earthquake in 2011, very, very few people were killed in the 9.1 earthquake. The vast majority, over 97%, were killed in the tsunami. So when we're talking about deaths and what we're actually trying to preserve, let's just really dig into the numbers of what we're actually preserving and the cost spent to do it. I think that's the most important part. And with that information, then we can really dig into a solution that will work for everybody.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it.
Mr. Kaiser, I just want to clarify that I was not proposing a tax. I just asked Dr. Britton what she
All right,
did
I don't want to put your name on that. So,
good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for your patience.
Yeah, there are about 9 Category 9, about 12 Category 9 earthquakes throughout the world each year.
Could you put your name in the record, please?
What?
Tell us your name, please.
Oh, Robert Hunter.
Thank you.
I own buildings here in town, and I rent part of my building out to the person who fixes the fire hoses and valves for City of Portland. But my building happens to be a URM, and it's great that you're listening to everybody here. I think that's wonderful. And take into account what they have been saying and bring them in on your decision-making. I talked to an acquaintance where I live in Southeast, and he has a building, owns his building in Southeast, but he rents in Northwest, which is a URM. And he said, straight out to me, if my landlord raises my rent, I'm suing him, and most likely the City of Portland. So it's very important for you to get this right by taking all this in from all these people who have been speaking and include them. That's basically all I have to say.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here. Good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Amanda Robichaux. I'm an attorney. I am not a building or property owner. I am a business owner with a long-term lease in a URM. We practice out of a 13,000 square foot building in Southeast Portland, the Old City Water Building. I wanted to start by saying is that, I care about my employees. I certainly want them to be safe. I want to be safe. I spend lots of hours at the office, so I want to be in a building that's safe. But I think that the cost, I guess, that you have been quoted, this $9 to $11, I think that's just incorrect. That lady, I'm sorry, and this is the first time I've ever even been in this building. This is the first time I've really even heard about this. Was like a couple of weeks ago, so I don't really know anybody else that was here, but that lady that was on the end, and she's even told you that cost doesn't include costs for displaced rents, but it also probably doesn't include displaced wages. I brought with me today 2 employees that live in the apartment building right behind our building. And so for them, they would be doubly affected. They told me that they pay $900 a month for their one-bedroom apartment. The goat blocks, the dumbbells, you think you can get a $900 apartment there? No. It's like $1,500 to $2,000 a month for a studio apartment with like the pull down bed. I mean, that's like what we're dealing with, and what we're like, for me as a business owner, I'm trying to keep my wages at a reasonable cost. I've got this minimum wage increase. I mean, we've already talked about potentially like moving out of the city, and I wouldn't want to do that because, I mean, what the city that we serve, this is our community, our clients. I mean, we're a disability law practice. We have, you know, 76 employees. We've got 4 partners. We create a lot of jobs, and then we also have a lot of people that we serve. We have thousands of clients here in Portland alone, and then in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest. But we have to think about that. We have to think about like these people that we help. Right, so I just wanted to let you know that like that cost that she's quoted you is just not correct. I mean, it doesn't count a lot of these other factors that it asks that you consider.
Thank you, and we don't want you to leave Portland either. So thank you for your testimony, all three of you.
Thank you.
Other Chandler Hicks. Is he still here?
He's not here.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go with Rudy Munzel, Fred Leeson, Maya Forte, Dana Hawans.
Can I see a show of hands? Yeah. How many people are waiting? Okay, good. Thank you.
Denise Pratt and Bill Pratt. Come on up if I called your name. Brad Hamer, Roseanne Romaine.
I think I scared them all away.
Good afternoon.
Hi, I'm Fred Leeson, board member, Architectural Heritage Center. I think more than most people, we appreciate the value of our URMs for the historical context that they bring to our city and our sense of place. We also greatly understand the human safety issues. You've heard many times today that your solution has got to be to find the funding, and we support you in that. I wish I was smart enough to help you. I intended to come with something that I thought was a unique and creative idea. Turns out not to. You've already seen it. That is the placarding thing. I was in California on a trip last November, went to the historic Carmel Mission built in 1797, and I saw the sign that says, you know, this is not an earthquake-safe building put up by the state of California. I think that's an idea you need to consider that does have consequences. When and how you do it, but I think primarily in residential buildings, people need to know, do I want to live here or do I not want to live here? Sort of like the package on the cigarette. We know cigarettes kill us, but you got a warning, do you want to smoke this damn thing or not? I think that's appropriate. The other thing I just wanted to end with is those California Mission guys were so smart in 1797, they put the gift shop right at the front entrance.
Good afternoon.
My name is Diana Huang, and I want to thank Nick Fish for his amendment recommendations. I also want to support Commissioner Fritz on putting the class ones and twos foremost in terms of higher seismic retrofit work and requirements. But for the class 3 and 4, I support most of the comments and sympathize with the building owners here regarding the need for the financing to make things work. But I would put it toward the mayor Wheeler and the commissioners. I'm making you a bold request to really look at how this seismic retrofit for the class 3 and 4 buildings can be done with very creative incentive packages and not the use of mandates. The reason I say this, I am the owner of a 1928 three-story beautiful brick building in Laurelhurst. It is not a URM, and I pride myself as being a person who does things proactively. My husband and I in 2016, we're actually looking at voluntarily doing some seismic retrofit work. Our building is soft story, not URM. So it has a series of garages. We were looking at what we could do to support the structure and the around the garages, install steel beams such as this. We spent about $10,000 in architecture and engineering work to do this, but as we found out about the city's proposal for mandates, we came to a complete halt. We could not proceed further. Nobody in the city could give us tell us that the work that we would do voluntarily would be grandfathered if down the line you decided to also have mandates for soft story down the road. We are at a complete stop. I looked at a bank for seismic retrofit funding. They said because my building is older than 1940, they wanted foundation work. So to keep my building and keep my building and do the work that's necessary. Now, seismic retrofit work, if we had to do things like tie in I don't have a problem with the roof stuff, but if we had to tie in floors and as well as the garages and do foundation work, it almost looks like it'd be better to build a new building. But zoning, R5, I asked the development, Portland Development.
I have to ask you to wrap it up.
And they said you could not tear down your, if you tore down your building, you could only build two houses. You could not replace the 14-unit apartment building. And to do that, you'd have to wait till something happened to it, like an earthquake or a fire.
Thank you. Appreciate your sharing that. Good afternoon.
Hello. My name is Brad Hamer. My family owns 4 apartment buildings on the URM list. We have come to the conclusion that we cannot justify the cost of doing the retrofits in these old buildings. They are not worth it when the infrastructure of the building is 80 to 100 years old, water, sewer, electrical, and heating systems. When this mandate passes, we will ride it out as long as we can. Then we will probably sell to a developer. We don't want to sell, but we believe the value of these properties will fall to the value of the land, which means loans will probably be defaulted on, and developers will pick them up cheap. The bad thing about selling to a developer is the affordable rent in these old buildings will be gone. I call it free market, low-cost housing. People are only willing to pay so much for these older buildings because they have less amenities. Dishwasher, individual laundry, enough outlets in the units. We do not want our buildings to fall down, but we cannot justify the cost. We are torn. We love the character and charm of the old buildings, but also want them to be safe. The best choice for us to make is to sell or demolish and rebuild. Also, will retrofitting the buildings make them usable after an earthquake? There are over 7,000 apartments on the list. I believe if they are not usable after an earthquake, then we are in a worse position. What we understand from the subcommittee is that retrofits are only designed to keep them standing during an earthquake, not so much usable after an earthquake, which means thousands of people without housing in the aftermath. Finally, I would like to see Portland have a comprehensive plan in place educating the people on the city what to do and where to go if services are needed. I have seen one mailer put out by previous Mayor Sam Adams, which was an earthquake communication node map. It also had information about being prepared, like emergency bag with a couple of days worth of supplies, like a bug-out bag kind of thing. I think educating the people on what to do during an earthquake is just as important as having safe buildings. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you.
Martha, you just made Jonna's day because she works on that with Mayor Sam Adams.
Say that again?
You just made Jonna Papa F. the Muse day because she works on that with Sam Adams.
I actually saw this on the news the other day. I got this like 7 years ago or something like that.
You're more of a pack
than she's
I
like
am.
Cheering behind you. you saved her best work.
Thank you so much.
It's been hanging in our building since we got it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All three of you, thank you for your testimony. Next three, please.
Roseanne Romaine, Dorothy Cofield, Lindsay Levy, Shea Gilligan. Okay.
Good afternoon.
Hi. It's actually good evening.
Well, yeah. It's getting there, isn't it? Yeah. Thank you.
I'm Roseanne Romaine. I am a small restaurant owner in Portland for the last 18 years, and we are located in a URM building. And myself and my business partner, who is also the building owner, have looked at the mandate and are fairly convinced that we cannot afford to work with this mandate. We won't be able to keep the building. We won't be able to keep our business. And I guess the most important thing to me are my employees. And there's 40 people that work for me, and I feel responsible for them. And if we can't and don't have funding and backing from the city, who I feel we have over the last 18 years been very supportive of in many ways, and not just by creating jobs and by creating tax revenue, but also by creating culture and tourism, and the restaurant industry I think is very important to Portland and brings a lot of money and a lot of people in. These 40 people would be unemployed. They would have, they have rent to pay, mortgages to pay. They put themselves through university here. We have graduated doctors, lawyers, nurses, architects out of the restaurant and out of our group of employees. This would be an immediate effect. It would be, we're talking about saving lives and saving our community, but we also have to think about saving people and the value of these people here and now. And I don't see a solution here with the mandate that you've proposed to us at this point.
Thank you. We appreciate your perspective. Good afternoon.
Dorothy Cofield. I'm here for my family, which owns 1329 Southwest 14th. It's called the Grandview now. I helped find this building for my dad, who is now 95 and a half and couldn't be here today because he's bedridden. And at the time, the building was known as the Glass Staircase. It was built in 1907, and at that time it had four floors. But in the 70s, a creative owner put in a fifth floor and put in an elevator. And the elevator had glass, and you could see the elevator go up. So it was called the Glass Staircase. It is 48 units. It is five floors. This mandate would be completely unaffordable, as many others have testified. I happen to be a land use attorney, and I help clients all the time get through different city and county processes. And I can tell you, their budgets are always sadly, sadly too low. In this day and age, you need a whole team of consultants. These buildings probably end up discovering asbestos. Other people have talked about ADA. Everything kicks in. And if it truly were $11 a foot, I think the city could easily set up a fund and do it themselves. But I don't think anybody that's testified here today thinks that figure is anywhere near realistic. So as everyone has said, we have these 48 units. We've limitedly taken care of them. We've met all the city codes all these years. We put in new fire escapes. We did everything that we were asked to do, and we can't do this. And people that have rents of $300, $400, $500 are not going to have a place to live, and it'll be an 8,000 square foot lot vacant. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Hello. My name is Shay Gilligan. I'm both an architect and a URM building owner. Therefore, I have dual interests, professionally to uphold the life and safety and building code compliance, and personally as someone who's invested in the city and lived through how much goes into even a partial upgrade of a URM. Based on my own experience and through assisting others in the process, the work, time, and money involved in a renovation always exceeds that of new construction, which reinforces my belief that all URM owners have already provided a great service to the city by being stewards. It's been said many times, and that's assuming that most old buildings need work, asking these owners to further shoulder the costs and burdens of seismic retrofits without financial assistance should be withdrawn. Again, I don't question the need to upgrade URM buildings, only mandating without financing. As an advocate for local and independent owners, those are our favorite clients, I don't know how to advise them when they're worried about how they will afford the impending required retrofits and they'll be forced to sell. As a young professional, I don't know how to mourn the ways this mandate prioritizes large developers and interests over small owners. I ask City Council to be more inclusive of the needs of those whose pockets are full of tools, pencils, and creativity rather than profit. And I strongly agree with the suggestion of another architect who said that there might be solutions found in creating surcharges on permit fees for new development to help subsidize old buildings.
That's an interesting idea. Thank you. Appreciate it, all three of you.
Next are Ray Johnson, James Bella, Mark Mizrahi, sorry, Malia Jensen. Come on up if I call your name. Malia Jensen, Linda Jo Davale Minzik, Vic Savara, Miriam Portney. Okay.
Would you like to start, Miriam?
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
I know we're all tired, so I'm going to try to keep it short. My name is Miriam Portney. I'm a full-time working student graduating next month from PSU with a degree in community development and sustainable urban development. I moved here from New York City in 2012 and found a home in Portland as I share its values around smart growth design, walkable neighborhoods, entrepreneurial spirit, access to nature, quality of life. I've been living in an affordable studio apartment in Southeast Belmont, which is a Class 2 URM building. It is close to public transportation, resources, and it has become my home. I have worked as a bartender in a French restaurant for the last 6 years. That has become my family. They are a Class 3 URM building. My excitement around graduating and moving ahead in my professional career has quickly turned to anxiety, as come June I will begin to repay my student loans. In one foul swoop, I considered a future of increased monthly bills, the loss of my apartment, of my job, and the health benefits that they have provided, as I know that neither of them have the finances to complete this retrofit. I am proud to be a Portlander and hope for the opportunity to contribute my hard work, passion, knowledge, and skill set to help envision a bright future for our city, as long as I can afford to live in it. This mandate is around the safety of residents and economic resilience in the event of a disaster. I think we can all agree that these are the desired goals. As I consider my own personal safety and my own personal economic resiliency, I feel that it is threatened. I hope that we do the best to consider our current public safety as much as our future safety. This is about more than myself and my specific situation. I represent a host of individuals who may or may not be aware of the situation that they are facing and the impacts that this decision will have on their lives. I have confidence that you will take due time to consider all of the issues presented to you today, and I am hopeful we can move forward collectively, collaboratively, and well-informed.
Well said. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon.
Hi, I'm James Bila, Oregon Earthquake Awareness. The only thing we have to fear are earthquake-prone buildings and shear itself. When I think of earthquakes in the Pacific Northwest, I think of earthquakes shaking ground motions, which reminds me of motion pictures. One of the greatest directors of that art was Cecil B. DeMille. Scenes were often great catastrophes, casts of thousands, total mayhem, chaos, clouds of dust, action. On one such scene, he knew he could only do one take, so he positioned three cameras at different locations. Action. After the battle, those dust clouds settled, CB runs up to the first cameraman. Did you get it? Ah, CB, I was going to get it, but my film jammed and I couldn't shoot. Ah. CB then runs up to the second cameraman. Did you get it? Ah, CB, I was going to get it, but a gust of wind blew my camera over and cracked the lens on a rock. Ah. One final cameraman, one final hope. As CB approaches, the cameraman yells, "Ready when you are, CB." So when will Portland be ready? City councils like to pass laws, but you can't bypass the law of gravity. Confucius say to see what is right and not to do it is lack of courage, not lack of balance, not fully cooked or half-baked. The only things we have to fear are earthquake-prone buildings and shear itself. And what I've heard today is that there's no way to pay for this stuff. So perhaps the city needs to set up a municipal bond program and provide low-interest loans from the proceeds of that bond fund. But after the earthquake, these buildings will be gone anyway.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Yeah, it's getting there. It is. Yeah, I think it's officially evening.
Yeah, my name is
Vic Savara, and I own and I live in a URM building. First of all, I'd like to thank the council members for forming the quorum so late in the evening. Okay, I was not expecting that, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
We appreciate your patience as well, everybody who's here.
Yep. And, okay, so I'm not going to repeat what other people have said. I was very pleased to hear the position of the mayor and of the other council members being so very considerate of the impact on single owner URMs. 2 years ago, I was the only person in the committee room, and I asked the question. I said, you're making decisions for 1,500 single owner URMs. How many of you own a URM? Not even one person. And I kept on pushing on that fact that you're making decisions without any representation. I want to publicly thank the Ewan family and the Roger family for organizing the Safe Portland Building movement, which has caused all of us to come together to share with you that we need representation. I would like to request the council that in your amendments, where you have mentioned that we should be represented, that you make it a mandate that the working group, which you have specified, must include, let's say, 7 or 8 members of the single owner URM family. Thank you again.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mary.
Next is Michael Fives, Keith Miller, Dave Bay, Patrick Hilton, Virginia Hankins, Emily Stutzman, Richard Young, Stuart McVeigh, Robert Butler, and the last person I show is W. Johnson. So if you didn't hear your name and you signed up, please come on up.
Magic words, the last presenter.
All right, real pickup.
Good evening, Mayor Wheeler and members of the council. My name is Michael Fives. I am a consulting geophysicist with a PhD from MIT. But more importantly for today's discussion, our family has owned apartment houses in Portland for over 80 years. Many of our buildings are URMs. We house over 200 people. We have over 200 units that are in URMs. The rents averaged $981, with some people paying $450 to $500. Some of our tenants have been with us for 35, 40 years. That's the population we're talking about here. I'm not going to go through all the rest of my testimony. You've heard a lot of it here. I just, as I'm sitting here all afternoon, I've come away with I think, a conclusion. It's clear that the city needs to develop some kind of flexible funding mechanism in order for property owners such as myself to be successful in this. It has to be flexible because you see the wide gamut of people that own many buildings to somebody that has one small building that's their retirement. So I charge the committee that you're forming, I hope you form it, with that task. And I think until that flexible funding mechanism or mechanisms can come into play, we have to take Class 3 and Class 4 buildings off the table. It's clear Class 1 and 2, yes, they need, they're critical and they need to be implemented, and the city needs to have a mechanism for doing their buildings. I applaud the amendments that, Mayor, that you've made, and Commissioner Fritz that you made, and that Mayor-to-be Nick Fish made, but I think that's the right direction.
He may never show up again.
It's too big a responsibility. Anyway, I thank you for all the hard work you've done, for all the hard work that the staff has done on this. It's a tough project. Let's get it done, and let's get a decision made. I think there's more light at the end of the tunnel than there was 3 years ago. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's do it right. Good afternoon.
Hello.
You get the final word.
Yes. Hello, Virginia Hankins. My husband, Danny, and I own a building on Martin Luther King in Fremont. We've owned it since 1990. And one thing I want to bring to your attention is that when we tried to upgrade our building and do some things, we struggled getting a loan for $60,000. So I know for a fact I won't be getting one for over $200,000 or either a million or millions. Right now in our building, we have three small businesses. One is a beauty shop, one is a record shop, and then one is an artist. They have employees there. So if this mandate happens, it will cause us to lose our building that has been in our family for 28 years. The three small businesses will have to close, which will affect the employees. It will affect my family, the business owners, and their families. And another thing I think is that communication, if my property manager did not communicate with me and let me know that this was going on, I would not have known. But they did send a flyer to my deceased father, who's been deceased since 2005. So obviously he wouldn't be able to read it. And my tenant, who said it doesn't affect me, so she just threw it away. And then I noticed on some of the pictures that they were showing of the earthquakes, I don't recall seeing one from Portland or in Oregon, and I know that we've had earthquakes here. And I think it's a good idea where you guys were seeing the conflict of interest being revealed, and that's all I have to say.
Well said. Thank you both. So thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. This was a long hearing, but it was an exceptional hearing. I think we got lots of good feedback. People gave us very, very thoughtful commentary. I'm leaving with a long list of good ideas. As promised, we're not going to deliberate tonight. We're not going to take a vote. I think we want to absorb this. Colleagues, it has been proposed that we continue this item to June 13th at 10:15 a.m., and it is my understanding, based on the master schedule, Carla, that we're all able to be present for that. Is that correct?
Currently, I show everybody in, yes.
Okay. Does anybody have any objections? Continuation, June 13th, 10:15 a.m., time certain. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much for
being here. Thank you so much. We are adjourned.